going on. The 51st annual lectureship for the Memphis School of Preaching will be March 26th to the 30th. And it is going to be, the general theme is build your hopes on things eternal. A lot of really good guys on this. I see BJ Clark and Billy Bland and where'd his name go? Kiselbach.
Ben.
No, not Ben. Ben's dad. Brian, I think, is his name. Brian Kiselbach. And see Glenn Colley, Rick Lawson, Mike Bonner. A lot of guys that real solid folks. So if you are interested in that over in the Memphis area, that is going to be a good deal. I know they're going to work hard on that. We've got February 26th to March 1st in Atlanta. Adam Orr is going to be coming in. And you can go to atlantacoc.org for that. I've known Adam Orr for a couple of years. He's a neat guy, and he'll do a good job over at Atlanta.
Well, we're glad that these programs are going on. What's next? We've got the Broken Bow Young Men's Retreat, March 31st. Oh, you know what we got before that? We've got gospel meetings coming up.
Oh.
We've got our gospel meeting at North Jefferson, the third full week in March with John. This is going to be the 19th through the 22nd, the third full week of March, and that's when John McCormack's going to be with us doing the gospel meeting. And I guess I'll be over at New Boston on the 26th through the 1st of April.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've got the 11th Annual Young Men's Retreat, March 31st through April 2nd. I love going to that thing. That is an amazing weekend out there at Broken Bow. The men of the Broken Bow Church of Christ are inviting all men to their annual Young Men's Retreat. Situated in the beautiful Beavers Bend State Park there in Broken Bow, Oklahoma. The retreat is completely free of charge to you. Lodging and meals are provided. The retreat offers lessons from six different men of God aimed at uplifting and encouraging young men. That being said, men of all ages are invited. We have they have plenty of dads, grandpas, and young boys present. There will be ample time given for hiking and fishing and sports. Things kick off Friday evening at 6 p.m. March 31st with a barbecue dinner. And we'll conclude after worship with a potluck at the Broken Bow Church of Christ on Sunday, April
6th. And Gray Harkey kills it when it comes to the retreat. We went a couple of years ago.
I think what JJ means by that is that it's amazing.
It's amazing, yes. Yeah. It is top-notch. And the speakers this year are really good. Stephen Ford is a fantastic guy, and he's going to do a really good job. A lot of other good guys that are on that list, too.
Jack Wilkie's on there this year from Pritchett.
Yep. Down the road from us. Logan Cates is going to be on it. I think I went to church camp with
him. From Durant.
Durant. I think I went to church camp with him. But tonight we've got a ninth annual gospel singing at DeKalb Church of Christ.
They're nice people over there,
aren't they? They are. And I know they would appreciate people that come.
Absolutely. We'll be very encouraged if you come. So we hope that you can make some of these good events, and we want you to keep all of our brotherhood events in your prayers, especially our local outreach, our gospel meetings. And so we want to turn now, and JJ has a guest online.
We have on the line Rick Pope. Joy, Brother Rick, how are you doing today?
I'm actually doing good, and you?
Oh, man, I'm living the dream. We're live here on the Gospel Radio Network. I know you're well familiar with the network. Has a show that airs every day. Encourage everyone to tune in at 11:30 on the Gospel Radio Network here. So just hang around this this morning. You'll get to have Brother Rick and maybe even Omari French. Doesn't he come on Fridays?
My Brother Bonner will be there, too, all three of us today.
Nice.
Is Omari in town?
Yeah.
He is in because of the workshop.
Do what?
I said I didn't realize that Omari was in town. He's in town for the workshop, right?
Doesn't start till March.
Oh, it doesn't start? Okay. Do that over the phone?
Yeah. So is Omari still out in California right now?
Yes, sir. He calls in, and we're able to put him live on the radio.
Oh, that's wonderful.
There you go. Well, we called you last month, and you were able to tell us about the Quit You Like Men Young Men Development Conference. What all new has gone down since we talked last?
Oh, we have finalized since last month. We finalized all of our speakers, and so JJ, we have an excellent lineup of speakers that are coming in, and I can't wait for this particular group of men to come in and train on these topics for this young man. So.
Awesome. Well, I've been plugging away at some of our young men, which you saw yesterday. I'd forgotten that I'd added you to that group, that group message. Yeah. So I was like, I'll get you his phone number. And you were like, I can give you my phone number.
That's all right. That's good stuff. I'm glad that the young man's interested. We need young men like that who are see good things and say, hey, you know what? I want to go to that. I don't want to go to Cozumel for my spring break. I want to learn more about the Lord.
Absolutely.
Do y'all have time? Are y'all interested in some of the names?
Absolutely. I was about to ask you about it.
All right. Well, of course, we're going to have Brother Omar French. He's going to be in town. This is a College Station at the BCS congregation. Brother Brant Stubblefield, who is a fine young gospel preacher.
He's the real deal. I like Brant Stubblefield.
Yes. Y'all know Richard Massey.
Yes.
So he's going to be there. He'll never go wrong with anything Brother Massey does.
And his jokes are on point. I appreciate his humor.
Yeah. I told him the other day, I've never heard the man preach a bad sermon. Never.
Never.
And every one of them are top notch. By the way, he's going to be teaching on how to put together an effective Bible study.
Oh, wow.
Sermon. So, Brother Dean Meadows out of North Carolina, young man that does some work with apologetics, and he's going to be there. He's got a very unique approach to teaching apologetics, and it really resonates with the young men and women. So Israel Rodriguez is going to be there. In fact, Israel and Joshua are going to both be there. They are, you know, solid, top-notch, go-getting kind of preachers. Melvin Bryant III is going to be there. Some of these guys y'all may or may not be familiar with, but some of your listeners may.
Absolutely.
John Wiggins is going to teach effective song leading. This man knows every song in the book, and he is he's put together one of the song books in the Brotherhood. Of course, Anthony Bonner I is going to be there. That would be Brother Mike. Tommy Hicks from Lubbock is going to be there. Richard Stevens III.
Oh.
I know that fella from Brown Trail area. He works with Brown Trail and preaches up in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. Good, solid.
I was in Richard Stevens' very first class he taught at the school on Romans. He is an excellent teacher who can effectively get a point across. I have so much love and respect for Richard Stevens.
Well, that's good because he's going to be talking about the mindset of mourning, dealing with the Lord's Supper.
Oh, in particular.
So
he's going to hit a home run with that.
Yes, sir. Brother Loyal Williams out there in he was out there in East Texas, but now I think he's moved up into the Metroplex. Good, solid gospel preacher. Know his sisters, know his dad, know his mom. I'm going to tell you, a good, solid gospel preaching family. They've gone with us on the campaign for many years now. Another name you might be familiar with, which you were some, Cody Westbrook is going to be their gospel preacher at the Southwest Church of Christ.
Nice.
Down there in Austin. Jason Rollo will be there. We'll overlook him for the minute. everybody knows Jason.
If he wasn't so bashful, yeah. then he would really do something with himself.
I'm telling you what, I got so much respect for this man.
Oh, yeah.
As a gospel preacher, an elder of the Lord's church. We give him a hard time, but he comes from good stock, and he's producing good stock, so we can't go wrong there. Brother B.J. Clark will be in on Friday.
Oh, good.
And Dean McDonald, who's one of the elders there at Bryant College Station, also sharp. You talk about a sharp man. I mean, This man is a retired veterinarian, and started one of the first animal hospitals in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. Has a patent on one of the procedures. I mean, this ain't no fellow we just pulled off the street. So these are sharp men. Up next, we got Rick Brumback. I think you're familiar with that name.
Oh, man.
We got two men that are associated with our schools of preaching and directing them. Of course, I would have called Brother Stapleton as well, but I know he's been having some physical difficulties, and we're always keeping him in our prayers.
Thank you.
Brother Michael Light will be there as well. You don't go wrong with Michael Light, I guarantee you that. The man is a throwback. He's a dinosaur among preachers, and I say that with a lot of respect for my friend Michael.
You're not talking about age. You're talking about his ability to wield the sword of the Spirit.
Exactly. Yes, sir. You'll probably appreciate that. A young man by the name of Joe Caesar is going to be there. He preaches out in the East Texas area. And he has a full-time job dealing with CPA stuff and money management, and he's going to be dealing with some stuff out there. Brother Anthony Culpepper, I wish I had time to wish I had Omari on the line. He could tell you this man is a sharp young man and used to work for Pepperdine until they went wild and wilder. and then he just cut ties with them. And he's just a sharp young gospel preacher, and we're looking forward to hearing him again. Last three, John Hall, who's the gospel preacher there at College Bryan Station, gospel preacher. I know his dad's a gospel preacher and a good solid young man. He's been on our campaign. Brother Kerry Clark, I think y'all know.
Kerry Clark, yes.
Brother Kerry's going to be on there. And then Wade Webster is going to be on.
I got one name
that I have not had confirmed. And so if y'all won't tell anybody, we're live on the radio. So I got one guy that I think is sort of kind of almost confirmed and ready to go, and it's a name that is one of those names that'll blow you away. I wish I could give it to you today, but I'm hoping Brother Omari can drop a line because he's responsible for gathering this gentleman in for us So they'll have to listen at between 11:30 to 12:30 to find out if this fellow's going to be there. And I guarantee you, when people hear his name, they're like, "I'm driving 100 miles to hear that man preach." Yeah.
Well, I sure hope y'all can land Ruble Shelley. I think.
Hey, I'll drive all the way out there and hunt you in the nose.
Hey, for anybody listening, you don't want to read any of Ruble Shelley stuff.
Is that guy even alive?
Past 1983.
Well, Chris, you're going to have to work on keeping him calm now.
Yeah. Well, you know, last month we called you, and you were able to tell us the different classes and such, and this month you're able to tell us speakers. We're going to call you again next month for a last plug. This is going to be a great deal. We're pushing it up here and going to continue to push it. And how many people do y'all have registered so far?
We have about 60, to my knowledge, that are registered, but I'm expecting about 125. By the way, let me mention this. All of the night sessions are open to everybody. It's like a gospel meeting.
Oh, cool.
Two speakers from 7 to 9, gospel preaching. Everybody's invited, so anybody in the area come out in the evenings. I'm telling you, listen, Israel Richard, Michael Light, Joshua Rodriguez, John Hall, Bonner, Clark, Kerry Clark, B.J. Clark, all of them are going to be on the preaching at night, and uh, it's uh, it's going to be well worth it's going to be well worth your drive just to come there at night.
Man, you were right. I remember you and I spoke at the BTSOP alumni lectures, and you said I got some good guys lining up, and you were not lying. That's an impressive lineup.
Go ahead.
I said that's an impressive lineup.
Yes, yes. Well, we've been working on it. It came about a long time, but we've been working on it pretty hard. So.
All right. Well, brother, we appreciate you. Appreciate your work.
Yes, sir. Y'all have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Well, that's wonderful. I tell you what, it's so exciting to see the people of God at work like this. It's great to see the congregation at Bryan College Station flourish.
Oh man!
You know, this was just a little bitty place at one time, and just got started. Some concerned members got together to form a new congregation. I think they were meeting like in a hotel conference room or something like that. Maybe at a school at one time.
And they're starting to get kids from the campus. And
absolutely.
Because from what I've gathered is that a lot of kids are going down there, and some of the big campus ministries that are at Texas A&M are no longer in line with Scripture.
Yeah.
And it's good to be able to, when somebody says that, hey, we got a kid going to Texas A&M, we can say, hey, check out the BCS congregation because we know that they're solid. So,
well, that's all good. Let's shift tracks now and kind of get into our text today. I mean, we've got a lot of area to cover. We're looking at Deuteronomy 4 to Deuteronomy 16. And we're going to kind of pick up in the beginning of, well, really towards the end of Deuteronomy chapter 4. And I was just looking at this. I'm going to preach a sermon on Deuteronomy 6 on the Shema statement. You know, hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one Lord. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. Yeah, and that's the basis for the song there. Well, I wanted to go back. I wanted to know, in verse number 6 of Deuteronomy chapter 6, it says, "And these words that I command you today shall be in your heart." Now, here was my theological question,
mm-hmm.
and that is just I'm trying to discern how big a pericope of this scripture text is what I was going to preach on, and so I had to ask the question: these words that I command you this day, what words are these words? I mean, does it go back to the beginning of the verse number 4? Does it go back to verse number 1 of chapter 6? Does it encompass chapter 4, verse 44, and the review of the Ten Commandments in chapter 5? Are we going back to Deuteronomy chapter 1? How far back is Moses considering in these words in verse number 6 of Deuteronomy chapter 6? So you can see why I would have to go back and get re-familiar with the text so I can kind of formulate an idea of what he has in mind here. Well, what I think is the most important, or maybe the hub of Deuteronomy, I think is right here in Deuteronomy chapter 6 and verse 4, because of what Jesus said about this later on in his ministry. He calls this, in verse number 5, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and with all your might." He calls this the first and great commandment. Every other thing that he has to say is going to be hinged upon that verse right there. And I think it's everything that he has to say back here in Deuteronomy. And yea, Genesis, all the way up to this point. Anything that's going to cause me to fall in love with God and render my obedience, which, by the way, this whole section of Scripture, the second address of Moses, has to do with loving the God of love. The aim of and the theme, I think, of this whole section of Scripture is to prove that obedience is the greatest demonstration of love for God. I mean, you know, Jesus said, if you love me, do what?
Keep my commandments.
Keep my commandments. And so commandment keeping is not a bad thing. It's a good thing. And I shudder to think what it's going to be like on the Day of Judgment for everybody who sits there and cries, legalist, you know, just because you want to obey the Lord.
Yeah.
I think that's nonsense.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we never, ever, ever see God say, you know what, love me, but on your terms.
Yeah, that's foolishness. Yeah, that's just foolishness, ignorance talking right there. All right, so, you know, if you get back to Deuteronomy chapter 4, verse 44, this is the law that Moses set before the people of Israel. These are the testimonies, the statutes, and the rules which Moses spoke to the people of Israel when they came out of Egypt beyond the Jordan. Now, what it's talking about, he's going back. Remember, Deuteronomy is a retelling of the law. And so Moses is about to resign here and kick off. And he's going back over everything that he's already done. I mean, look, we're talking about 40 years here,
mm-hmm.
Maybe a little bit more. They're 40 years in the wilderness, and Moses has been with them, and it's time. I mean, it's time for Moses to retire. It's time for Joshua to take over. It's time for that new young generation. Everybody that has died, that was going to die in the wilderness, that God, remember we read about that, how God was going to cause those complainers and those doubters to die in the wilderness. They weren't going to get to go to the promised land. Well, they have a whole new crop of young, of people, a whole new generation that has grown up. In they were born in the wilderness, and they've been told about this promised land. They're ready to obey the Lord and go. And I think it's interesting, you know, when you get over here into chapter 5 and verse 1, he says, "And Moses summoned all of Israel and said to them, 'Hear, O Israel, the statutes and the rules that I speak in your hearing today, and you shall learn them and be careful to do them. The Lord our God made a covenant with us,'" where? "In Horeb. Not with our fathers did the Lord make this covenant." Now, if you ever do a study on the covenants, you know, it's an agreement, a promise that God makes.
Mm-hmm.
And there's several. There's not just the Old Testament covenant. There are covenants within the covenant, okay? And this is one of those covenants within the covenant. We read about it in the Old Covenant, right? "Not with our fathers did the Lord make this covenant, but with us, who are all of us here alive today." God has made a promise to us, all right? "The Lord spoke with you face to face at the mountain, out of the midst of the fire, while I stood between the Lord and you at that time, to declare to you the word of the Lord, for you were afraid because of the fire, and you did not go up into the mountain. And he said, 'I am the Lord your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. You shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make for yourself a carved image or any likeness of anything that is in the earth.'" So we're getting into the Ten Commandments.
Yeah, Exodus chapter 20.
Yeah. So here's a retelling of those commandments. And so in verse number 22, he says, "With these words the Lord spoke to all your assembly at the mountain, out of the midst of the fire, the cloud, and thick darkness, with a loud voice. And he added no more. And he wrote them on two tables of stone and gave them to me. And as soon as you heard the voice..." Now, it's interesting that he says, "as soon as you heard the voice." Now, how many people are here at the present in this text that actually remember Sinai? I mean, is he speaking to them as a whole nation? Or is he speaking to this new young generation? I have a feeling that he's speaking to them as a nation, you know, as a people.
Right.
He says, "And as soon as you heard the voice out of the midst of the darkness while the mountain was burning with fire, you came near to me, and all the heads of your tribes and your elders, and you said, 'Behold,'" and see, he's talking about the collective, in the collective sense. He said, "Behold, the Lord our God has shown us his glory and his greatness, and we have heard his voice out of the midst of the fire. This day we have seen God speak with man, and man still live." That didn't happen before, you know. Man can't look on God and live, right? Mm. So now, therefore, why should we die? "For this great fire will consume us. If we hear the voice of the Lord our God any more, we shall die. For who is there of all flesh that has heard the voice of the living God speaking out of the midst of fire as we have and still lived? Go near and hear all that the Lord our God will say and speak to us, all that the Lord our God will speak to you, and we will hear it and do it." In other words, they said, you go, you're not going to live, you're not going to die. You go hear what God has to say, and you can tell us." In other words, they were afraid of the Lord, and they thought they were going to die. "Well, and the Lord heard your words when you spoke to me, and the Lord said to me, 'I have heard the words of this people which they have spoken to you. They are right in all that they have spoken.'" They're absolutely right. You know, they were scared. It wasn't just scared. They would have died. I guess they would have died. The Lord is confirming what their concern was here. In verse number 29, he says, "Oh, that they had such a mind as this always to fear me and to keep all my commandments."
You know,
and this has got us commending this fear and reverential law here.
Absolutely. It reminds me of the short story I had to read in I think it was Masters of Western Lit when I was in college. And this story was called "A Good Man Is Hard to Find." And basically the principle is you've got a grandmother that's always into stuff, and she gets the family in trouble, and they end up stopping on the side of the road. It ends up being robbers. The robber kills the family, ends up killing the grandmother, and she went from being real awful to being like this real sweet woman when she had the gun pointed at her.
Yeah.
And the end of the story says something along the lines of, she'd have been a good woman if she had a gun to her head her whole life. And we see a principle that's here right now is they would have been a good people had they feared me forever instead of, that healthy reverence, not cower in fear.
You know, we in the New Testament, we are people that have been told we can come boldly to the throne of grace. And I still, what our problem is, I think in the New Testament, we have such a... we may be over-graced in our theology to think that we can get away with things. I mean, even Paul said, you don't need to continue in sin that grace may abound. That's Romans 6. Okay, so you don't abuse God and God's grace. And remember that Hebrews 10:31 still says it is a fearful thing to fall into the hands of the living God. That's a New Testament principle as well. And I think that we need to really restore our sense of reverence for God.
Well, people think that because Jesus died, they can do whatever they want. And some adhere to the false belief, once saved, always saved.
Right.
Whenever somebody asks me about that belief, I turn to Hebrews 10:26-27, because the Hebrew writer is writing to Christians.
Right.
And he says, "Those who sin willfully will have a fiery expectation of judgment." Of course, I'm paraphrasing. So the people that believe, well, I can do whatever I want and God is going to be happy with it. No, you can't. I mean, right. It's been made abundantly clear that if we choose to willfully sin, that there no longer receives a sacrifice for sins.
Right. And I think that, you got to take that into consideration as well as what that meant for the Jews, especially wanting to go back to Judaism.
Mm-hmm.
I think we can take that same principle and apply it to us going back to the world and abandonment of faith. But
it's interesting what people want to pull out from the old law.
Yeah.
Because people want to pull instrumental music. Well, they use it in the old law. David was a man after God's own heart. Yeah, different law. And they want to pull these different aspects, circumcision. They wanted to do all that. But, I never, even today amongst our denominational friends, I never hear somebody say, you know what we could really use on Sunday mornings? A bloody sacrifice of a bull. You know, we should really sprinkle both sides of the pulpit with the blood of a bull.
Right.
Because you look at Deuteronomy chapters 1 through, or Leviticus chapters 1 through 5, and you see the different types of sacrifices they made. This is an essential case of cherry picking. People want to pick the things they like from the law and not do the other things. And that's the whole problem the Jews had. They cherry picked what they wanted to do and then didn't do the rest, and God wasn't pleased. And here we have a brand new law that we're under, the New Testament church, and Paul's getting onto them about trying to cherry pick something from a law that no longer applied to them.
Right. So Moses has gone over the Ten Commandments again with them and has encouraged them to walk in all the way that the Lord has commanded you. So we pick up in chapter 6, and look at this. He says, "Now this is the commandment, the statutes, and the rules." He said that in the beginning at chapter 4, verse 44 and 45, and he says it again in chapter 6. So he's centering this around the Ten Commandments. This seems to be the scope of the message that he's talking about. And he says that you may do them in the land that you're going to possess it. Now watch this. That you may fear the Lord. This is a recap of what we just talked about. That you may fear the Lord your God, and you and your son and your son's son, by keeping all of his statutes. So what equals keeping all of his statutes? Or what equals fear the Lord? Keeping all of his statutes. The words fear the Lord and keeping all of his statutes go together. Well, and all of his commandments.
Jesus said that. If you love me, you'll keep my commandments.
Yeah.
14:15.
But it goes together. It goes together here. It goes together in the Old Testament. It goes together in the New. Look at verse 3. Hear, Israel, and be careful to do them, that it may go well with you, and that you may multiply greatly. So you do them, it'll go well with you, you'll multiply greatly, because they were supposed to fill the land up with these people, okay? And he says in verse number 4, Hear, Israel, the Lord our God is one Lord. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and with all your might. Now notice this. And these words, I don't think he's just talking about verse 5. I think he's talking about all that we've talked about up to this point. And these words that I command you today, there's the scope. What I've talked to you about today shall be on your heart. Now, you got to put the word in your heart. It does no good just to leave it in the book. You got to put them in your heart. And here's what you do. Verse number 7. You shall teach them diligently to your children.
We see a parallel to Ezra chapter 7 and verse 10. Yeah. He applied this passage. He studied, he applied, and then he taught. I mean,
absolutely.
He put it in his heart. That was his objective.
To know the God. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, so if you, and I've got mine squared off here. I write in my Bible, otherwise, so I said, you shall teach them. Teach them is something that I've highlighted, right?
Mm-hmm.
The next thing is talk of them. You're going to teach them. You're going to talk of them. When you sit in your house, when you walk, by the way, when you lie down and when you rise. And so I've got, you're going to talk about the Word of God when you're sitting, when you're walking, when you're lying down and getting up. Basically, it needs to be the top of conversation all the time, right? All right?
You know, it needs to be on your mind.
That's right.
I don't think we can, there's a time and a place for us to have hobbies, and I think God understands that. He gave us all this great stuff to in life that we can experience, but I think that it needs to be, we don't need to set up a false dichotomy of I'm a Christian here, but, you know, I'm a father, I'm a dad, I'm a basketball coach, I'm this and that, I'm a Christian father, I'm a Christian son, I'm a Christian this. So, I mean, I believe that it's something that it's who we are. We put on Christ in baptism, and therefore, all of the decisions that we make are pertaining to Christ.
Right. So you're going to teach them. You're going to talk of them. You're going to bind them.
Mm-hmm.
It says, bind them as a sign upon your head, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes, and you shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates. So he's going to teach them. He's going to talk of them. He's going to bind them. We're going to write them. And here's what's going to happen. When you saturate your life with this kind of gospel, I mean, with this type of mentality, it's kind of like buying a new car. We bought we were so proud to buy a Toyota Camry.
Beautiful car, too.
Well, you know what? I'm grateful that we have it. I am so excited that we have it. But you know, ever since we got one, we see them all over the place now.
Oh, yeah.
Man, they are everywhere. We are not as unique as what we thought. But what does that do? You know, when something is on your mind, you become more situationally aware of what's around you. And I think if you're going to feed your mind with garbage, you're going to see. Here's something. Along this line,
mm-hmm.
If you are going to think about good things and righteous things and holy things, that's going to be what you see more than anything. And I think what happens is to the pure, all things will become pure. And you'll stop seeing, unless you're really keen and really paying attention, you may stop seeing evil around you. Whereas a police officer, for instance, who deals constantly with crime, constantly sees the laws that people break. They are trained to see things that you and I aren't trained to see.
The way that I'm kind of seeing it as well is we are to put on glasses, and through those glasses, the lens is being New Testament Christianity.
Yeah.
So that when we see things that the world's like, oh, this is great, we see and go, no, that's sinful. And that where the world's like, why would you want to go to church? I see that as great. So, I mean, that works as well. But, yeah, the people that have jobs where they have to look for the worst in society,
It's hard to turn off.
Yeah.
But it's interesting to know that what you think about, what you put in your heart and your mind, is what you're going to see and what you're going to have a tendency to practice. And this principle right here of teaching them, talking of them, binding them, and writing them is he wants to purge their hearts of idolatry. And the only way to get rid of any idol is to replace it fully and completely with God alone.
Mm-hmm.
And his things. And you get his things and his will and his precepts in your mind. What in your mind, and you're not going to sin. What did David said? I have hid my word, hid your word in my heart. Why? That I might not sin against you. Yeah.
And when it talks about adding something to your heart, and this is something that people get confused about, is it's not something that happens miraculously. It takes effort. It takes study. It takes diligence.
Yeah.
And so once they put that on your heart, it means not only to read it, but to study it, to want to apply it, to put it on your mind, that sort of thing. So when people are like, I just wish I had the Bible knowledge that so-and-so has, I'm going to let you in on a treat. Yeah. You can.
Well, let me – and here's the thing. We're gonna do – like I do in my sermons at church, we're going to run completely out of time because we've entered the time warp unless you haven't understood how I work.
Well, we're good, man.
Everybody wants to say, don't hang out with Grota. It's a time warp.
Oh, no, this is good stuff right here.
Well, so you get to verse number 10, and notice that this kind of gives you a reason why he's talking about all this. He says, when the Lord your God brings you into the land that he swore to give to your fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, to give you, with great and good cities that you didn't build. You're going to come into a land, into cities that you did not build. You're going to inhabit these cities that you did not build. And you're going to live in houses full of good things that you did not fill. All right? You're going to drink from cisterns that you did not dig. You're going to eat from vineyards and olive trees that you did not plant. And he says, when you eat and are full, now, you're going to come in there and you're going to get all good and used to this. All right, you beware, verse 12, lest you forget the Lord.
And it happens every time.
Every time.
Every time.
This Lord who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery, he saved you from slavery, you forget. Don't you forget God. I tell you what, most any people who've ever been enslaved, when they enter into freedom, there is a propensity to forget how God saved them.
Mm-hmm.
And so they forget the Lord, and they'll go back into slavery. And that happens spiritually speaking as well. Verse 13, it is the Lord your God that you shall fear. It is him who you shall serve, and by his name you shall swear. You fear him, you serve him, and you swear by him. No, and don't forget, he says in verse 14, you shall not go after other gods. The gods of the people who are around you, they're going to be all around you. Do not give into that. Warning, warning, warning. And God says this so many times because they're so prone to this disease of idolatry.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to just put it like a sickness, but it is. Sin is like a sickness, and we need the great physician, right?
Mm-hmm.
For the Lord your God is your God. He's in your midst. He's a jealous God, and the anger of the Lord your God be kindled against you, and he'll destroy you from off the face of the earth. Do not put him to the test, verse 16. All right? Well, and you notice that they could not go over to the promised land without thrusting out all your enemies. You know, we think about them going to the promised land, just moving in. Oh, no. It wasn't that easy.
It wasn't peaceful, no.
They had to go to war, didn't they?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, let's move on through and tell me what's going on in chapter 7 and 8.
Chapter 7, we see a chosen people that Moses is telling them, all these people that you're going to go into the land, you're going to drive them out because you are the chosen people. You know, when Caleb entered into the land, he went to the mightiest place.
Right.
Because he had been there before, but he had faith in God. He believed that God was going to do what God promised to do. Verse 6, you are a people holy to the Lord your God. They were sanctified. They were set apart. The rest of the world was still under the law of the patriarchs. They were going to be under a law that God was insulating them to ensure that the seed line stayed pure. And there were times that they messed up and God disciplined them.
Yep.
But God is a God that keeps his promises.
And we ended up getting Jesus, and that was the sole purpose that we find here. So it is a reminder that that they were to do what they were supposed to do. Verse 12, and because you listen to these rules and keep and do them, the Lord your God will keep with you the covenant and the steadfast love that he swore to your fathers. You right. are going to reap the benefit of the promises that I made to your fathers. And it goes to what you had just spoken about. We look over mm-hmm. to chapter 8, where we see, remember the Lord your God. Verse 1, the whole commandment that I command you today, you shall be careful to do, that you may live and multiply, and go in and possess the land that the Lord swore to give to your fathers. And you shall remember the whole way that the Lord your God has led you these 40 years in the wilderness, that he might humble you, testing you to know what is in your heart, whether you would keep his commandments or not.
Right.
And he humbled you and let you hunger and fed you with manna, which you did not know, nor did your fathers know, that he might make you know that man does not live by bread alone, but man lives by every word that comes from the mouth of the Lord. Everything that they had when it came to the wilderness, God provided.
Yeah. As long as they followed the Lord, you know, they would have their food, they would have their fire, they would have their shade. Anything that they needed, God was going to provide it. Keep in mind, friends, as we skim over the chapter, keep in mind that this chapter 7 is about the fact that these Israelites are going to have to come into contact with the seven wicked nations that that inhabited Canaan, and that they were going to have to be called to warfare. They were supposed to utterly destroy these people. They did not need to make any kind of league with them. They didn't need to make any kind of peace treaty with them. They needed to utterly destroy them.
It's made abundantly clear that's yeah. what they're supposed to do. And one of the first yeah. things they do is they go in and make a peace treaty with yeah. some of them.
Look at verse number 17 of chapter 7. He says, if you'll say in your heart, these nations are greater than I, how can I dispossess them? You shall not be afraid of them, but you shall remember what the Lord your God did to Pharaoh and to all of Egypt. What they're talking about right here is, don't you get the same kind of grasshopper mentality your ancestors got when they went to spy out the land?
Yeah.
Don't do that.
Yeah.
That's what cost you 40 years in the wilderness to begin with.
Yeah. This is why you've been wandering around the wilderness. And they were going to overtake it, and God led them every step of the way.
Mm-hmm.
So we see chapter 8, verse 11, again a reiterance of take care lest you forget the Lord your God by not keeping his commandments and his yeah. rules and statutes, which I command you today. Take care, because if you don't do this, problems will come.
Yeah.
And we see God disciplining his people multiple times because they didn't want to keep his commandments.
Yeah, and by that, it's also testing. He's putting the Lord to the test. I don't know if we always realize that, but that is a way that we put the Lord to the test. We put him to the test, and that is frowned upon in chapter 8, verses 1 through 20.
Mm-hmm. We look over to chapter 9. This is not because of the righteous. Here, O Israel, you were to cross over the Jordan today to go in to dispossess nations greater and mightier than yourself, cities great and fortified up to heaven, a people great and tall, the sons of the Anakim, whom you know and whom you have heard it said, who can stand before the sons of Anak. Know therefore today that he who goes over before you as a consuming fire is the Lord your God. It doesn't matter that they're big. You got me.
Right.
It does not matter. He will destroy them and subdue them before you, so you shall drive them out and make them perish quickly.
Mm-hmm.
As the Lord has promised you. Do not say in your heart, after the Lord your God has thrust them out before you, it is because of my righteousness that the Lord has brought me in to possess the land, whereas it is because of the wickedness these nations that the Lord is driving them out before you, yeah. not because of your righteousness. We can take a cue from that, as sometimes people think, well, I'm going to get to heaven because of my righteousness. No, yeah. we get to heaven
yeah.
because we're obedient.
Right.
Jesus already paid the price.
You know, I'm also thinking about Romans chapter 11. Mm-hmm. Remember, he's talking to the Gentiles there about how they're in a covenant relationship with the Lord that was a covenant that was designed to be for the Jews first, and then also to the Gentiles. You know, how we're saved by, you know, God's gospel has the power to save to the Jew first and also the Gentile. Romans chapter 1, 16 says. Well, you know, he explains in detail in chapter 11 of Romans. He says, look, you are like this wild olive tree. You're like a wild olive branch. You've been grafted into the tree. You're not the root, but you've been grafted into the tree. And you just need to remember, you don't need to get all haughty in your spirit, because God is using you to make the Jews jealous. Don't sit there and think that you're all that, because I can prune you just like I grafted you in. Just like the Jews got pruned, you know, I could prune you too. And so I think it's interesting just to realize from a human perspective, we don't need to get prideful.
Oh, no.
And that's what this is telling us right here.
Oh, absolutely. Further on in chapter 9, we see the golden calf is reiterated of, you did this and it was not smart to do. They need to keep their eye off of idolatry. They need to focus on doing as God commands them to do. And it's just kind of a rundown of Exodus chapter 32.
Look at verse 12 of chapter 10, the circumcision of your heart.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking about pride just a second ago, but he says, you know, now Israel, what does the Lord your God require of you but to fear the Lord your God, to walk in all of his ways, to love him, to serve him, serve the Lord your God with all of your heart and with all your soul, and to keep the commandments and the statutes of the Lord, which I am commanding you to do to this day for your good. And that's a question. He says, what does he require of you but to do this?
Yeah.
And so, behold, the Lord your God belong heaven to your to the Lord belongs heaven and the heaven of heavens and the earth and all that is in there is. And yet the Lord set his heart in love on your fathers and chose their offspring after you. So circumcise therefore the foreskin of your heart and do no longer be stubborn.
Yep, the physical circumcision is cutting off a useless part.
Right.
Spiritual circumcision, or circumcision of the heart, is getting the useful stuff, the useless stuff, cut off from your life. So you become a Christian.
And sinful.
And sinful, that, yeah.
Unclean.
You get all that stuff out of your life. That is the principle. So that I've always followed. Chapter 11, we get another way of saying that you're to love and serve the Lord. He's having to be redundant because these people have to hear it. We see a lot of things that we've seen already. Verse 18, you shall therefore lay up the words of mine in your heart and in your soul, and you shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. Verse 26, I have underlined in my Bible, see, I am setting before you today a blessing and a curse. The blessing, if you obey the commandments of the Lord your God, which I command you today, and the curse, if you do not obey the commandments of the Lord your God, but turn aside from the way that I'm commanding you today. They had a choice. And when they did things good, God didn't punish them. But when they did things bad, they were. We look to chapter 12, the Lord's
worship.
Worship. Yeah. We look at worship. Verse 28, we see again, be careful to obey all these words that I command you, that it may go well with you and with your children after you forever, when you do what is good and right in the sight of the Lord your God. That is a general theme through the speech that we're going through today, is follow God, do what God says. You are protected when you do what God says. Good things happen when you do what God says.
Did you notice in verse Deuteronomy chapter 12, how that the Lord chose the place of worship? Legitimate worship could only take place at the spot designated by the Lord. The phrase, the place which the Lord will choose, is used six times in Deuteronomy chapter 12. It's worth highlighting, I think. The place which the Lord shall choose.
And if he has the ability to choose where to be worshipped, he definitely has the ability to how we worship.
Man, I tell you what, that is a powerful statement.
That works.
That is a powerful statement. That'll preach right there.
That will.
Well, all right. So, you know, there's some worship laws in this verses 1 through 32 here. And
interesting point over in chapter 13. I hate to cut you off, but it just really sticks out. Verse 5, which is a really long verse.
Yeah.
But the latter part of that we see is the God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, redeemed you out of the house of slavery to make you leave the way in which the Lord your God commanded you to walk. So you shall purge the evil from your midst.
Mm-hmm.
So they were to get the things that weren't following God away from them. That involved people. that involved
the false prophets.
False prophets that involved so many different things. If your brother, your son, your mother, yeah. or all of that is your own, entices you secretly, saying, "Let us go and serve other gods," which neither you nor your fathers have known. Some of the gods of the people who are around you, whether near you or from far off, from one end of the earth to the other, you shall not yield to him or listen to him.
Right.
That is why it was so imperative that the Jews marry Jews. And yeah. we see that in Malachi when God is rebuking the priests. In Malachi chapter 2, he's saying, not only were you okay with divorce, you encourage them to leave the wives of their youth to go yeah. marry these foreign women. And the foreign women are pulling them away. And we see that happen today.
Well, and here's an important point. You just read it because it's talking about a relative or a friend. We're talking about false prophets. He's warning against false prophets, relatives or friends that might lead you astray. Think about how great and how powerful the temptation is from a relative or a friend. I mean, it's so much. I mean, you see it in the church today. Think about these people who have a marriage, divorce, remarriage. They hold the truth on it, what the Bible says about it, until they have a friend or a relative that gets caught up in the sin. And then what are they going to do?
Oh, they change their position.
They change their position every time. And so, you know, this is that. Just that's just this kind of thing that's talking about. If you look at verses 12 through 18.
Emotions cloud your vision.
Yeah. Verses 12 through 18 talks about whole towns. You know, the temptation is most difficult to resist when everyone is doing it. And so mass sinning has to be dealt with. And an investigation was to be made of any town rumored to be advocating worship of other gods.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were policing each other in that sense. And I think it's interesting that, you know, some people think that, oh, well, you know, whole congregations can't be withdrawn from. Now, you don't see an example of that. But, I mean, think about that. If you have a whole congregation, I mean, so while the church is autonomous because things go south in one group of people,
mm-hmm.
you can have another group of people that are going to be sound, solid, and scriptural. And I think that you know that you have that principle set up here in chapter 13. I mean, if you could have a whole entire town go bad, and you've seen it with Sodom and Gomorrah. I mean, why would you want to pitch your tent towards Sodom? You know, that influence that's there.
Well, you look at the church, which is notoriously weak up north,
yeah.
And you've got false teachers preaching that Jesus returned in A.D. 70, and there are entire congregations
that are
turning to that.
You know, that's a weird doctrine, because
yeah,
Paul said there would be some that were doing that in the first century, saying that,
yeah.
right, that Jesus already returned. I cannot. Well, I mean, if Jesus came the first time, and our whole calendar system is AD and BC is surrounded by the event of his birth. If Jesus came the second time, and that was supposed to be such a big, huge, monumental event, don't you think that we'd have it recorded in history somewhere?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Just use some common sense. I just can't get my mind wrapped around why anybody would think this.
Even worldly writers at the time admitted there was a Christ and admitted he had a following. So you'd think if there was some gigantic event,
well, everybody's meeting the Lord in the air.
Yeah, that Josephus would have been like, the weirdest thing happened today. All of a sudden, these people that were that were Christians
started floating up in the air.
All of a sudden, these people were floating up in the air. It was the wildest thing you've ever seen.
Right.
But we don't see that type of writing, and I don't think it's because people wanted to suppress history. That's the type of thing you write about. It's like, I saw something weird,
yeah.
and we don't see that. We look in chapter 14. We talk about clean and unclean food. That's been talked about. We've got the sabbatical year. We've got the Passover, the Feast of Weeks, talking about the different festivals that they were supposed to adhere to, and that ends up closing out.
Tell me something about every seventh year. What was particularly interesting about the 7 years? Every 7 years.
Well, every 7 years you shall grant a release. So you're.
This is not the same as Jubilee, because that came along every
50, wasn't it?
50 years.
I think so.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm sure they'll be getting into that soon with you guys. But we're sorry that
we got 2 minutes, man. We got 2 minutes. Let's get this one more thing in before we close it all out. You've got provisions. Let's see. Here where we are. Okay. You've got the sabbatical year.
Ooh, let's talk about the forbidden forms of worship. You shall not plant any tree as an Asherah beside the altar of the Lord your God that you shall make, and you shall not set up a pillar which the Lord your God hates. So do not incorporate worldly things into worship to God. And, you know, we see that happen in the church today, not church today, but in Christendom today, is that people want to bring false religion type things into worship of God. And it's mind-boggling that it happens. And here we see God specifically saying, do not do this.
That's right. That's absolutely right. The sabbatical year is a year of release. And you mentioned it just a minute ago. Verse number 9 says, take care. And this is in chapter 15, verse 9. Take care lest there be an unworthy thought in your heart, and you say, the seventh year, the year of release, is near, and your eye look grudgingly on your poor brother, and you give him nothing, and he cry to the Lord against you, and you be guilty of sin. You shall give him freely, and your heart shall not be grudging when you give to him, because for this the Lord your God will bless you in all your work and in all your undertakings. For there will never cease to be poor in the land. Therefore I command you, you shall open wide your hand to your brother, to the needy, and to the poor in your land. There is a principle here that we need to remember. We've come to the end of the show today. I'm so grateful that you've joined us. I'm Chris Groda.
Along with J.J. Hendricks.
And you just got to remember, we are proud of you.
Been listening to Mornings for the Master on the Gospel Radio Network. Remember to join us each weekday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. Central Standard Time, or catch the replay at 9 p.m. Central Time. You can also contact us at mornings@tgrn.org if you have any questions we can help you with, or if you have events you would like to submit to our bulletin board, or just with general feedback about the program or network. We would love to hear from you. As we've had opportunity to spend time with the Master this morning in His Word, let's remember His words in Luke 6:46, when He said, "Why call ye me Lord, Lord, and do not the things which I say?" He goes on to say in verse 47 and 48, "Whosoever cometh to me and heareth my sayings and doeth them, I will show to you whom he is like. He is like a man which built an house and digged deep and laid the foundation on a rock. And when the flood arose, the stream beat vehemently upon that house and could not shake it, for it was founded upon a rock." Let's show the wisdom of that builder and go now to live for the Master.